Thank you. The recording has now started. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Sam. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the IRTPC call on the 24th of April 2012. On the call today, we have James Waddell, Mikey O'Connor, Barbara Knight, Bob Mountain, Hugo DeFallo, Simonetta Batiger, Matt Serlin, Philip Corwin, Roy Dykes, Angie Graves, Kevin Erdman, and Chris Chaplow. From staff, we have Marika Koenig and myself, Natalie Peregrin. We have apologies from Michaela Nalen and Paul Diaz. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much. And Rob Golding has just joined the audio bridge. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, depending on your time zone. Welcome to the IRTPC PDP Working Group call for April 24th, 2012. As per our custom, we have two matters of housekeeping first up. Does anyone have any updates to their statements of interest? Please indicate so by raising your hand now. All right. And secondly, does anyone have any questions, concerns, or suggested adds to the agenda, which you see in the right-hand column of your Adobe screen and was circulated on the mailing list earlier? If so, please raise your hand. And nothing for that. And we have someone typing. If you could, please mute your line when your microphone is not active. Thanks. Okay, so as you can see, our agenda is posted. Marika circulated that yesterday. Thank you, Marika. And based on just my peripheral involvement with some of the efforts of the two sub-teams, I think we have a lot of material to cover this week, and I'm starting to wonder if we're going to get through our entire agenda. We may get through three and four and then have to stop for the hour. So let's kick that off. First off, let's maybe start with Simonetta and see if she can update us on the change of control sub-team. Simonetta, go ahead.
Yes, so we had one more call with the sub-team this past week and spent a lot of time there on this one particular issue in the process that we kind of raised on last week's call already, whether or not an opcode should be used, or the existing opcode system should be used for this change of control authorization as well, or if a second and separate parameters should be used in the EPP protocol for that. And Mikey spent a considerable amount of time on actually summarizing the issue so that we can take this summary and provide this as input and information to the registrars and registries to let them tell us whether or not I think it's a good idea to do all of this, to do multiple things with the same parameter, or if we should be designing a process that uses something else as a transfer authorization credential. And you see this up on the screen in front of us right now. Maybe Mikey, because you wrote this and it's mostly your passion and initiative that went into this, you can walk us through it.
This is Mikey. I'd be happy to do that. James, is that okay with you?
Oh, yeah, thanks. I just wasn't sure if you were on the line. Yep.
Yeah, I was fumbling around with the mute button. Let me just walk through this little ditty that I wrote. I think that, let me just walk through it. As you can see, there's this idea of giving a piece of data more than one meaning. And, this harkens back to my days when I actually worked for a living, and actually a lot of this came out of the work I did in the manufacturing sector, where manufacturing companies get into all kinds of managerial trouble when they attribute multiple meanings to either the same data element or the same value of a data element. And so one of the things I want to preface this with is that this is really more a technical reaction than a policy reaction. But I think that if we don't pay attention to the technical issue in the policy discussion, we run the risk of creating some problems down the line. So with that, then I went ahead and stole the definition that Paul had posted to the list literally seconds before I started writing this, in which, at least according to the ICANN website, the auth info code has a meaning, one meaning, that it's the authorization or confirmation of a transfer request. Now, one of the tricks to that is, well, what do you mean transfer? Do you mean transfer between registrars? Do you mean transfer between people who control the name? You know, so there's some ambiguity there. But I think that the intended meaning was transfer between registrars. We can circle back to that, because I think that's the key to this thing. And I'm fine with a definition that's that narrow. I get, like I say, uncomfortable when the definition gets broader because of sort of two things. One is the multiple meanings problem, and so I go and steal a little stuff from Wikipedia there that wasn't very well written, so I quoted it, but I did acknowledge that that's not the way I'd have written that sentence. You know, and I think that this is sort of my technical reaction, which is, you know, this is just bad data practice. And a good database administrator, somebody who actually knows how to do this for a living, I think would agree with me. And then, you know, point to the fact that I think this overloading is perhaps already taking place, as people are using auth info not just for the indication of a transfer request, but they're actually using it as a semaphore to indicate all kinds of things. Without doing a whole bunch of research, it's hard to know. But as we overload that data element, I think that we create a number of problems. The other is the difference in the way that people treat it in terms of the length of time that it's valid. And, you know, we've had a fair amount of discussion about when they get created, when they get updated. Sometimes these auth info codes have a very long life. Other times they have a short life. And to me, that's the same kind of problem, is that since we don't have clear definitions around this, we leave ourselves open to creating some trouble. So then I go into just a series of possible meanings that may already be out there, and I think there's no way to verify this except to indicate that, you know, there's anecdotal evidence that this kind of thing is going on. And then I go into a little list of troubles that that might cause, mostly because I'm really interested in securing these processes. These are security kinds of issues. By that time I was getting pretty tired, and so my options aren't terribly creative. I came up with several options. One is to just not do anything and overload it some more, which I'm cranky about. I think that's a bad idea. But, you know, I can be overruled. Maybe I'm just, I sometimes do get out in left field, and so if I'm way out in the middle of nowhere, I'm happy to be corrected. I think that a couple of ways to solve this, if I were a database manager, I would say, well, I either create a new data element for transfer of control. So now we have auth info reg for changing registrar and auth info control for changing control. Another way to do it would be, and this might be a better way to accommodate the varying use of auth info, would be still to create one more data element, but have it be a typing element, you know, an auth info type. This auth info code is type registrar, and so it's valid for a change of registrar. This auth info code is type control, and it's good for a change of control, and you know, you can then imagine a boatload of type codes in there. And that way you'd only have to create one more data element in the EPP scheme, and you could use it to do all sorts of things. Another would be to specify that this semaphore is only valid for a very short period of time. The trouble with the time thing is that that doesn't solve the overlapping use of the same auth info code for multiple transactions problem. And so I'm less keen on that. I think it would also be quite a bit more disruptive to existing practice. But again, this is way down in the tech weeds, and I'm not sure that we even want to go there, except to say, no, we're not going to use auth info code because we don't want to re-engineer the use of auth info code in all of the places that it currently appears. So that's kind of the list, and I had a little list of things to think about: data integrity, process integrity, costs, both to registrants and to registries and registrars. And then I kind of wind up by saying, you know, I think that this is really quite close to the heart of the change of control issue, especially if we continue to overload auth info even more. So there's my rant. That helped, and I'll hand it back to James.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. And I think we really appreciate the thought and effort put into this, and I would encourage everyone who hasn't had a chance to review it. I think there's some important concepts in here. Simonetta, did you want to continue?
Well, my thought on this, I'm just looking at what we need to get out of a subgroup that designs a draft for the process, and we kind of we came up with a first draft, and we came up with a list of questions that went to the mailing group, was sent by Marika, I think, on Friday morning last week, and then we followed it up with putting more flesh on this one particular question on how this credential should be looking like. And I think at this point, I'm unsure if the sub-team should continue to work, or whether with these questions that we have identified, we need to come up with another survey or outreach to the registrars and registries so they give us the information that we need. I'm not even sure we have the knowledge to answer these questions in this workgroup right now. So I'm looking to you, James, and the rest of the workgroup to get some guidance from you as well on what you think how we should proceed, because I don't know if with where we are right now, it makes much sense for Michaela, James, Mikey, and myself to keep going back to this draft and starting to try to do anything with it, because we don't have the information we need to proceed, I think.
Thanks, Simonetta, and I think I agree with you. I think that the work, the sub-team has reached a point where it has come back with a menu of options. I think Mikey's identified one. I think there are a couple of others. There were a few, if I recall from last week's presentation of the survey results, there were a few that were also relatively evenly divided as far as the lack of consensus. So what I would recommend at this point, I don't know if we need to formally go back to the different stakeholders at this time, but maybe I think we have a good cross-section of expertise already on this group between the registries and registrars. I'm getting a pretty bad echo now. Sorry. Can we make sure you're on mute, please? That's pretty bad echo. Anyway, so if we could please... I'm sorry, I can't speak. If you're not speaking, could you please be on mute? Thank you.
Thank you.
So, okay, so I get a note that they're looking into the echo. But anyway, I think that this working group needs to has reached a crossroad, as someone that identified, and we need to put these questions out. I think that we possess the expertise on the group and that we can address these questions on the group, at least make an attempt to address these questions between the various registry and registrar reps. I think we have the background necessary. Does anyone have any concerns about that approach? And Simonetta, what do you think is the best approach to laying out those choices, those open questions, in a way that the working group can tackle them?
I'm not sure. Maybe this question should go back to the working group, because we put the questions to the mailing list in the form of two emails. Would you like us to combine this into one more email saying, and this is what we need input on, because I'm not clear what else we should bring to the work group to ask the question. It's been asked, I think. Maybe we should just review it here in the call one more time. Marika, maybe you could bring up that email that you sent last Friday as well, so we can take a look at this, so everyone is clear on what the questions are.
That would work.
Yeah, just remember, if you give me 1 second, I need to find that email and then bring it up on Adobe Connect. I mean, there were, I think, two responses on the mailing list, I think, from Paul and from Barbara on some of the questions, if I recall well.
Okay. So that means the rest of us, myself included, have some homework to do on those questions. So while we look for that, again, thanks, Mikey, for your work on this. There was another point of view on this issue that I think had also some validity, but certainly didn't feel as passionately about it as about the issue as Mikey did. And I don't think it was necessarily an opposing point of view. It was just similar considerations with a slightly different outcome. So here's a message from Marika and from the sub-team. As you can see, there's a few open questions here. There are 6 open questions. We did receive a note, I believe, from Paul and, was it Barbara?
Yes.
And then Mikey, I think, responded to this thread with the document that he posted that we just went over. So, you know, Simonetta, do you want to, or I can walk us through these since I know you had some audio issues, so I can walk us through these questions. But I think that we need to get these resolved because this is where the working group has, the sub-team has hit its boundary. So the first one is, I think, should be relatively straightforward, is we need to finalize terminology. We talk about change of control, change of registrant, losing, gaining registrant, old versus new registrant. I think that based on our discussions in Costa Rica, it seemed like we were kind of congealing around this idea of old versus new, just because that was simpler and easier to translate. Does anyone have any strong feelings about old versus new or losing versus gaining? Can we settle that one at least today, you think? Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I think a couple of weeks ago I raised a concern about old and suggested maybe previous or prior instead of old. I think that's the only, and there was some discussion about that, but that would be my only suggestion. I'm just not sure old is perhaps the best term to use here.
Thank you, Bob. I do remember that now, and certainly the prior registrant could be a young person. So let's take Bob's consideration into account here and call it prior versus new. Any concerns, objections to that? Previous and new, some variation of those, I think, would probably be fine. And we say change of control versus change of registrant. I think that change of registrant implies a change of control. I'm thinking about a Venn diagram here, but does anyone have any thoughts about this? Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just a note in the discussion that we had in preparing the meeting with the CCNSO, they didn't understand at all what we were meaning with change of control. When we told them it was about a change of registrant, then they were like, oh, is that what you're talking about? So from a mere communications perspective, the term change of registrant might be easier to understand for people what this actually is about instead of change of control. So that would be, you know, my only comment.
I tend to agree. I think while change of control might be more technically correct, change of registrant is more accessible and makes the topic more easily understood. I see some hands up and some agreement in the chat room, so we'll go with Matt next.
Yeah, thanks, James. I was just going to agree with what Marika had said and then what you just agreed with, that I think change of registrant is much more simpler for folks to understand rather than change of control, so that would get my vote.
Thank you, Matt, and I see some green ticks agreeing with your agreement. So, Mikey, can you weigh in as well?
I think the one thing that we need to address, if we say change of registrant, I don't have strong feelings about this, but recognize that that's confusing because it could mean change of registrant info like address or zip code or phone number. Or it could mean change of the controlling registrant. So it's almost like you need to describe what kind of a registrant change you imply. That's the
reason. Yeah. It's changing the registrant entity versus the registrant contact data. Is that what
yeah,
you're saying?
Exactly. Like? Yeah, that's precisely the problem. So maybe another word in there, like controlling, to stay carefully away from owner, which raises all sorts of other flags. You know, I just think that change of registrant isn't quite precise enough.
Okay. Matt, further thoughts?
Yes, Matt. Mikey, I mean, I see your point. I guess what we just need to clarify is that what we mean by change of registrant, like James says, is the actual entity name. So if Matt Serlin has a domain name registered at, you know, 123 East Street, and I move to, you know, 179 North Street, but the registrant name is still Matt Serlin, then that I don't think would be considered a change of registrant. However, if I sell a name to Mikey O'Connor and I change I want to change the registrant from Matt Serlin to Mikey O'Connor, then I would think that is a change of registrant. And there's several CCTLDs that operate just in that manner, that you can update, you know, the address, the phone number information, but you cannot update the actual entity name, whether it be an individual or a company name.
Okay, thanks, Matt. I think we're, you know, violently agreeing with one another here. There are some concerns and some confusion. I think, Mikey, in some respects, when we go away from change of control and go towards change of registrant, we accept some degree of imprecision in exchange for ensuring that this is understood by as wide an audience as possible. I do want to, we have five more of these, and we still have an easy half hour of sub-team B update here, so our sub-team A, or I'm not sure A or B, but with the other sub-team definitely needs to weigh in as well. So I want to see if we can move on to any of these others here. Mikey, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys, but I am not keen on building imprecision consciously into policy. Sorry.
But we can define this in the narrative.
Yeah, but the problem is not in the narrative. The problem is in the application out in the world. And that's part of the reason why we've got this overloading with auth info, is that the definition seems quite clear, but the use of this stuff isn't. And if we build an imprecise term, consciously into our document, we're making a bit of a mistake. I won't belabor this, but you can belabor it now or you can belabor it later. I'm not keen on imprecise stuff going into these documents.
And Mikey, I think Marika is expressing something a little more articulately, but something similar to what I was thinking, is that in the policy we can have a definition section. And this is just a label that we use. But we can define the label just like some of my earlier attempts at writing software in the early part of the policy, and then move to the later part of the policy where that label has been used to refer back to the definition. I don't know that we have to build it into the label, is what I'm getting at. Does that make sense? So at the beginning of the policy, you could say, for example, definition, change of registrant entity, a change of the entity that controls the domain name registration, changing the fields, name, organization, maybe email address or something like that. And, indicate which field you would determine constitute a change of controlling registrant entity. And then, because we'd even have to get a little more precise, because ICANN doesn't define anyone as a registrant. They use the term registered name holder. So we'd have to be even more precise there. So we build that all into some sort of preamble, and then for the remainder of the document and for the remainder of the report, we would say change of registrant, referring back to that definition. I think that addresses your concern, Mike, in that it squashes out the imprecision, but it leaves the label accessible so that it's understood. Anyone have any strong thoughts on this? Barbara with the check mark, but other than that, silence. I thought that was going to be an easy one, folks. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go down a can of worms, because we still owe Bob Mountain quite a bit of time here. So can we put a push pin in this email? Marika, maybe we can resend this to the list and say we need folks to weigh in on these six questions. These are the loose ends from subteam, the ideal process subteam. Based on the survey, these are fairly evenly split throughout the working group, and we need to, we need to bring these six in for a landing. So if you can kind of put your thoughts on each one of these, as well as any reasons why you think it must be one way or another, or will or will not work, and then we will get those back to the list, preferably by next week's call. We will have some discussion on this. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Are you happy for me to just add in, a couple of notes on what we discussed today, and just noting that, on today's call, the working group seemed to favor this approach. If you disagree, share it on the mailing list just to take note of what we discussed today.
That would be fine, especially the one that we got with previous and new registrants. Okay. Changing gears here for a moment, if you recall, the data gathering subteam headed by Mr. Mountain designed a survey to submit to registries, registrars, domain investors, registrants, and other folks, interested parties in the community. That survey was distributed. We gave them an extension till Friday, and these responses have now been collated and are ready. So I would like to turn this over to Bob for a Bob, but can we try to shoot for about 20, 22 minutes here as an overview, and we will, if necessary, we can cover this again somewhat next week, but we really have to, I guess we're up against a deadline for agenda item number 5, so Marika would like us to spend at least 3 minutes on number 5. So, Bob, if you can, take it away.
Yeah, thanks, James. This is Bob. I can absolutely cover it fairly quickly. As James mentioned, the survey was closed yesterday. We did get 101 responses, so thanks to everyone for your efforts to encourage responses, and thanks, Marika, for pushing this through. We did get it out to the to an entire ICANN list of registrars, as well as the registrar stakeholder group and registry stakeholder group. I'll go through quickly the survey. I won't cover it in great detail. I'll just buzz through, give you the subteam met yesterday, and we went through our sort of high-level observations, so I'll share those. What I would ask that is if everyone could take a look at this survey responses, get any observations you might have back to me, and then what we're going to try to do is by next week's meeting or by next week, no later than the end of next week, present a findings report where we'll finalize the survey and sort of put it to bed and circulate the findings to the work group. So if everyone's okay with that, I'll go through again quickly and at a high level what we found. First of all, on the respondents, we did have a very good turnout, and the turnout we thought was very balanced. The blend of registrars seemed to be both small, mid-tier, and large. We also had 7 registries responding, which we thought was appropriate. The team felt on question 5 that we might benefit from a little bit of subsegmentation, so to separate out the registrar respondents and then determine what sizes there were of registrars. So we're going to try to do that. If it's just too mind-bending, we might not, but hopefully we'll be able to spreadsheet jockey our way through that. We'll certainly report out on that. On question 6, in your opinion, should the FOA be time-limited? The majority said yes. So if you look at that one, it's 71% were saying yes. However, in the comments, a disproportionately larger share of the comments were the opposite way. So people who were writing why it should not be were more than the people who just said no. What that meant to me is the people who feel no might feel a little bit more strongly about it. There might be a little bit more impact or forcefulness in the people who were saying no than the people who just said yes. And you can see there were quite a few comments written after that for your review. I think 25 in total. Question 7, if you voted yes, what would be the appropriate time limit? Most of the people thought it would be 30 days or less. And we did have actually some changes to that. So I think one person who responded 1 year had asked to have their change to 30 days based on current practices. So the vast majority are looking at a fairly short period of time, 30 days or less for that. And now then we move on to question 8. If you are a registrar, do you already time limit the FOA yourself? And almost half of the people already do. So while many are saying we should, many are already doing that themselves. And so the benefit of having it mandated would be not so important for those folks. Question 9, why do you apply a time limit? There was a range of responses there, and to be honest, I did not identify a common theme or strong buckets as far as that. That one, I guess we'll just look to get some input from the group and maybe look at that a little bit more carefully. Again, as I'm rattling on here, feel free to raise your hand in the on the Adobe Connect if you'd like to jump in. Now, I thought question 10 was very interesting. Have you ever experienced a problem with the transfer for the FOA not being time limited? The vast majority said no, 87%, in fact, I believe is the right number, said that they had not experienced a problem because of the FOA not being time limited, 88%, sorry, in the latest numbers. So while many people are saying we should, not many people are saying they've ever experienced a problem, so I thought that was interesting. Question 11, have you heard about problems? So, not experienced yourself, but heard about someone else. And a much smaller number had experienced that, 4%. There was some additional correlation requested on question 11, so we'll try to get to that if we can before we issue the findings report. Let's see, and in question 12, if you answered yes, how often have such problems occurred in the past 12 months? And it was fairly small number. Most people had not at all or very, very few problems. The transfer, you can see, question 13, seemed to reflect the registrars themselves and the size of the registrar. So I think that was fairly consistent with the responses we got up front. In terms of 14, now we get into some editorial. Are there downsides? And most people felt there would not be. However, The ones that did object felt that there was increased complications and increased cost involved with doing this. One of the sub-team members pointed out yesterday that the standardized change of control might address this. If we put sort of the two subgroups together, then perhaps the increased complication and cost are not necessarily isolated to this, and whereas might be part of a larger effort. Moving on, point 15, if there is a implement or requirement to time limit FOAs, do you think that it would be, well, you know, what's the scope of the effort? 74% approximately felt that it would be minimal or some. So most people aren't anticipating this to be a huge effort, and the minority felt it would be a significant effort. James, just the time check, how are we doing so far?
You're doing great. I'm watching the queue, and it's clear so far, so thanks, Bob.
Okay.
Please continue.
Great. All right, so number 16, other things we should take into account. There were, you know, again, a wide range of responses, some actually funny, and they were more, I think, more or less reflective of the previous input, and we'll take a closer look at that to see if we can bucket out any responses and categories. Moving on to charter question C, this was the one involving whether or not we should standardize on IANA IDs or somehow modify the use of IANA IDs in combination with proprietary IDs. The you know, the problems here, as it was pointed out, was people don't always remember their proprietary ID, and market share stats and things like that are harder to determine when you're using one or the other, but not both. So in question 17, have you experienced or are you aware of problems resulting from the use of both? Most people said no. Based on the printout, maybe not the most up to date, but about 18%, according to the numbers I had, were had said they did have problems. So most people aren't saying they do have, they're having problems, but you know, some are. Question 18: what are the benefits? In terms, I think the one common theme I spotted on question 18 in terms of the responses, and we got a ton of responses, but most people thought the simplicity would be the benefit there. And we'll again take a look at that a little bit more closely for the findings report. Should there be a requirement to only use IANA IDs? It was pretty much split, a little slightly more saying yes, but you know, somewhat more of a third saying yes, and somewhat less of a third saying no, and the remainder saying no strong view either way. So this one really seemed to be kind of all over the map. Question 20, if you responded yes, what do you think the effort would be? And the majority, 77 or 78%, felt it would be minimal to some effort. But most people are saying it's not a huge amount of work to do it. Question 21, should there be a requirement to use it in combining with existing IDs? Somewhat of a majority said no, that they would not prefer to do this. Some of the commentary here was perhaps the idea of grandfathering existing IDs, so there wasn't the need to change the people who are already doing it this way. However, the new TLDs would, or new registries would use, would standardize on IANA as potentially a compromise approach. All right, winding down, number 22, what would the effort be? And again, the vast majority felt it would be minimal to some, not significant. And 23, what are the ramifications? The one common theme on this one was that this would be a real problem to get the CCTLDs to standardize on IANA IDs. You know, questions like good luck getting the CCTLDs to agree to this was one, I think, telling comment. And lastly, 24, are there any other considerations or thoughts? Again, I thought that was fairly reflective of the prior comments. Nothing really jumped out at me. So that was it. So again, to summarize, that's at a high level. Please send me your comments. We'll summarize for the final findings report and hopefully wrap that all up next week. And that's all I had, so I'll turn it back over to James.
Thank you, Bob, and certainly appreciate you expeditiously going through the survey results. Folks, we went through this fairly comprehensively yesterday, and I would emphasize that there is quite a bit of good information here. sometimes the responses shine some clarity. Sometimes, of course, they create more questions. I would strongly encourage everyone to take a look at these, especially in some of these open-ended questions where we just simply, the survey just asks for respondents to enter their thoughts or opinions. I think there's some good information there. So we are looking then for the sub-team to provide more of a narrative analysis or summary by next week. Is that what we're thinking about?
Yes, that's correct. I guess interpretation of the survey, yeah.
Okay, so here's the data, and then next week will be what does it mean?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Okay, so we have a few minutes here, about 7 minutes. So I'll take a cue for anyone who has any questions or observations on the survey. We want to try not to inject too much meaning into it at this time, but if there's any questions about it or if you see anything that might be a problem, please let us know now. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
Hi, James and everyone. This is Barbara. So I think that when we're looking through the survey questions and results, I think you're going to have to look more closely as far as which respondents are providing input. So, for instance, with regard to the levels of effort associated with perhaps implementing the proprietary and the INID scenario, I think you need to really look to the registries and the registrars for input on that, because they're going to be the ones that know what the impacts of their systems are going to be and what the level of development would be in order to make those types of changes. So I think you may have to provide additional weight to those particular respondents because others who may be looking at it, you know, more from a periphery, if you will, would not have necessarily the level of detail and information that they would need to be able to truly determine what the level of effort may be. So I think you just have to kind of weight some of these responses accordingly.
Thank you, Barbara. And in fact, that was a point that was raised during the sub-team call yesterday. And I think because we had the raw data, we were discussing that it could be possible to correlate the affiliation of the respondents versus their responses for any particular question. It's just a question of, do we have to do this manually, or is there a programmatic way to do that? And I think Bob has some Excel gurus taking a look at that issue now. So good point, and it is one that we are catching, at least trying to take a look at how easily that can be fixed, or how easily that can be cross-referenced.
Great, thank you.
And Minetta.
I want to agree with Barbara on this point, and I actually wonder if one learning from this survey should be that one thing that we should ask for as well, if we ever do such a survey again, and maybe we do one in this work group or a future work group, we'll do one, where we're asking a question that is very technical in nature, and it's kind of the same thing with this question we have open with the op-info field. The people who are really working on the technical side at a registrar or at a registry would be the most valuable respondents to a question like this, because they really know. And I wonder if the recipients who got the survey link distributed through the ICANN policy work were a lot of the people who sat on the policy side of things or on the business side of things, and they just shoot from the gut. They don't necessarily really understand what systems level-wise these things mean. So if I think we just need to shoot for a way to also capture what type of role is somebody in who is responding to something like this. And also, if we know that we're trying to find an answer to something that's quite technical, we need to probably specify this in our outreach to the stakeholder groups that we want whoever gets this request for information, that person to pass this on to the technical folks in their team to comment on, because otherwise some of the comments you will get back will not be reflective of what the real issues might be.
Okay, that's a good good observation, and I think that we can't always assume that a registry or registrar is going to have that person who wears 27 hats responding to this survey. We need to make sure that if they have someone who is dedicated to that function within their group, that they're at least relaying that survey to that person, but we should probably indicate that in the survey when we ask the question. Mikey, go ahead.
Thanks, James. It's Mikey. I think one other thing that we should harken back to is a series of questions that we asked right at the beginning, which is, what's the underlying reason to make this change? I'm looking at the notes that I took, I think, from our first or second call. And in those notes, we had a bunch of questions, or at least bullets, that said things like, well, let's come up with some sort of justification, benefits, you know, why do this? What was the underlying rationale? Because this is one of those issues that's probably 10 years old, and it may well be that the world has changed since this issue was initially raised.
I'm sorry, Mikey, can I interrupt for just a second? There were two. Are you speaking about time-limiting FOAs, or are we talking about IANA IDs? I'm not clear on what.
I'm on IANA IDs. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
And it seems to me that we need to do that piece of background work. And I think that one of the reasons that it's useful is for the team, for us. But I think it's also important to preface a survey like this with the reason why we're asking them. Because otherwise, I'm going to hand that to my tech people, and they're going to say, oh, it's hard, and then they're not going to, you know, so I think one of the other things that we need to do is answer those questions that we framed for ourselves long ago and then put that answer in the front of the questionnaire.
Okay. Can I ask, Mikey, that when you respond to this survey on the list, could you maybe cut and paste that question specifically from our original conversation? I think it's on one of your mind maps where we discussed an approach document. Maybe Marika can help us find that as well.
Well,
I think that's a really good point. We don't want to lose that. Go ahead.
Ooh, it was really ugly going into the chat. I was hoping it would go into the chat.
Oh, okay.
Never mind. I just tubed the chat. I'll post that along.
Okay. Thank you, Mikey, and I think good catch there. We would have probably flown right past that. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, on the IANA number, I mean, there's two real reasons for wanting to use that. First is it simplifies contact with the registries from the registrar's perspective rather than having 84 different codes for 84 different registries. The second is that in the communications they send out relating to transfers, they often put the code in there, and I've got absolutely no idea who 1170VP is, but I do happen to know who IANA number 1471 is, and that is a published list, whereas the registries don't publish a list of who their customers are and what their codes are. So it's impossible in some methods to say to a customer, you are asking to move this domain to blah, if we don't actually have a way of looking up who blah is.
Okay, thank you, Rob. I see that the queue is clear. We have about, by my account, we have about 8 minutes left. So I wanted to, first of all, thank Simonetta and Bob and the folks on the sub-teams. There was a lot of heavy lifting done since our last call. And looks like we're scheduled for another week of heavy lifting. And I think that's good. There's a lot of progress going, and I think Simonetta has correctly identified that we may be hitting a certain point here where the sub-teams value or that the appropriateness of having a sub-team solve all of these issues is starting to reach a crossroads or reach an ending point. So we want to make sure that we are helpful to that as a larger group and that we're providing the guidance and information that they need. I do have to allocate about 5 to 6 minutes on item number 5, but Simonetta, go ahead.
I'm actually unclear at this point. I don't know if it makes sense for the subteam, the change of control subteam, to meet between now and receiving further feedback, or if we have to get the feedback first and then maybe schedule something for later next week to get together as a sub-team again, because I don't think there would be much value in us, for example, trying to get on a call tomorrow while we are still waiting on input on these questions. That is my understanding. If there's other opinions, I'd like to know so we can find the best date to schedule the next call.
I think your observation is correct, Simonetta. For the ideal process sub-team, it seems like the next or the most immediate task is to get the larger working group to weigh in on those open questions that were distributed earlier and that are now going to be redistributed, so much so that we will have an opportunity next week to discuss those as a larger group. So I think that you're correct in that we are probably on hold with that sub-team until we have some feedback from the larger group. Okay. So looking at item number 5, and it's very innocuous looking, it says ICANN meeting in Prague planning. We've had some discussions whether that should be a face-to-face, a regular meeting of the working group, an open meeting of the working group, a closed meeting of the working group, or a workshop where we present our initial report. I think regardless of what we decide on the working group, we definitely need to have an outreach session where this working group presents its initial report and then engages all interested parties who may have questions or comments about the findings and recommendations. So I think that's kind of a given for Prague, and I think we identified that very early in the life cycle of this working group. The second item then becomes whether or not that week in Prague will also see a face-to-face working group. For those who were in Costa Rica or who attended on the phone, I think that that was a fairly productive session, and it flowed very nicely into that conversation that we had with the CCNSO. So my thinking here, and we have to bear in mind that Marika is under some deadlines to get the time slots requested on the Prague schedule. So my thinking here is that we request the most that we think we will need, and then if we decide that we don't need the face-to-face working group, we can drop that at a later time, and then that everybody gets an hour back in their day. So what we came up with was Wednesday, which is, I don't have the date, I think it's the last Wednesday in June, we would meet in the morning from 9 to 10 a.m. As a working group for a face-to-face meeting, and then from 10 to 11, we would conduct an open workshop community meeting where we would present the interim report, the initial report, and its findings and recommendations. That is roughly analogous to the sessions that we had in Costa Rica, where we met in the morning on Wednesday, and then we met with the CNSO a little later in the morning. So does anyone have any thoughts? I mean, hopefully no one has inked in anything into their Prague schedule yet. Does anyone have any strong feelings about why this will or will not work, or should we just perhaps request it at this time, and then if we absolutely need to make a modification later on, we can at least pare it back from there? But so what we're requesting is 2 hours from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. On Wednesday in Prague. Matt?
Yeah, thanks, James. Let me start by saying that I'm horrified that we're already talking about planning for Prague. I think what you described is fine. I think the thought about going for the most amount of time and then paring it back if we need to is fine. What I was actually sitting here thinking as you were kind of going through that is, I think it was Barbara that had earlier said that, you know, we really need to make sure that we're engaging with the registrar and the registry folks on this stuff. And I'm just thinking, would it make sense for us to try to hold a workshop and do some outreach both through the registrar stakeholder group and the registry stakeholder group to get folks to proactively attend that session and actually be able to engage with those folks in person to try to pull out some of the information that we got in the survey and to kind of talk through some of the operational stuff that we've kind of been talking through here to really get a better understanding of what the implications of this stuff might be? Would that be something that we think would make sense?
Actually, Matt, I think that's a brilliant idea, and I think it's the benefit of having this on Wednesday, which is the day after Constituency Day,
right,
where we can get on the agenda of those two groups and really any other groups and raise these issues as well as encourage the membership of those constituencies and stakeholders to attend the outreach session the following day. So I think that would probably fall. What we probably need is a volunteer from each constituency. So obviously I would take the registrar, and then if only I had an ex-con member who was friendly to this idea, that could help me out.
Yes, second.
I'm looking at you, Matt.
Yes.
that can help me out in getting on the agenda, because I think when we get into these discussions of like RAAs and things like that, I mean, the agenda just goes out the window.
Yeah.
And then if we had either Barbara or Roy could raise this within the registries group, if we had now that Mikey, for example, is an ISP, he could raise it there, and so on and so forth. I think that we can then identify going into the meeting on Wednesdays which findings and recommendations were most important to which stakeholders, and that they would be there then to engage the working group. So, okay, Barbara, I think I see your note here. I think that raising it at the meeting tomorrow, we don't really have anything to present, though. I mean, maybe you can give them a heads up. Is that what you meant?
Yes, this is Barbara. That's what I was just going to say, heads up. And because I know that a lot of people's schedules get pretty booked up, so I just want to give them a heads up that we may be looking to do that.
Okay, and I'll do the same. And I would encourage anyone else who's in the non-contracted party house or just has a more general affiliation, that everyone please take this back to your stakeholders as well. So, anyone have any strong objection to requesting that time, that block of time, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Wednesday? Besides those of us from this hemisphere that will be jet lagged, I think that we can all live with that time frame. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika, and no objections to the time frame, but just to know that, you know, it's a request I'll be making, but it's not a guarantee, of course, that we'll get that time slot. It also depends on other meetings taking place and you know, the overall schedule, how that's going to be organized. So I'll definitely put in a request, and I'll keep the working group posted if there's a need to make any.
No, see, we know that you will get whatever you will ask for, that you will get that, and we have 100% confidence that whatever time you ask for will be delivered to us. So.
Okay, thanks.
Not even a concern. But yes, if there for some reason, if, you know, the president of the Czech Republic decides that he wants to hand out ice cream at that time and we find that we have a conflict that's just immovable, then yes, we should probably reopen the discussion. Okay, well, that is the top of the hour. Thank you, folks. We went through a lot of things, and I know that a lot of folks have expressed to me that occasionally I will seem to be maybe moving a little too quickly, but I just want to emphasize that our timeline is very short, that we have very few, you know, our time on the calls is precious, and I would encourage folks who want to cover these issues even more in depth or detail, or have opinions maybe that aren't easily expressed verbally, then I would say that we do have a mailing list, and we should make as much use of that as possible. It's a really excellent tool, and it also keeps a permanent record of what we'd like to say. So thanks again for your contributions. And we'll circle back next week. Have a great day.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, bye.
Thank you, Samuel. Now stop the recording.